Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com.
Tennessee sounds perfect.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a Gagillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio. Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. This is part two of a continuing history of breakfast cereal. So if you have not heard part one, you might not be totally lost, but you will enjoy this on a deeper level. I think that's fair to say.
Ben, I have to tell you, I'm Noel, by the way, and you're Ben. The first part of this series, you opened the show by asking Max and myself whether we had eaten cereal for breakfast or, you know, any kind of breakfast cereal. I come to you today having not eaten breakfast cereal exactly, but I did eat French toast sticks. I don't know if anyone's familiar with this innovation. They come in sticks now, pre-sticked, and you just pop them in the oven, and boy, howdy, are those things delightful.
And they don't feel, for some reason, the stick form makes it feel as though it's not as heavy as eating regular French toast, which may be just a complete Jedi mind trick. But as we'll find out today, cereal is full of those. Breakfast foods is an industry, you know, from bacon on down. Big shout out to our super producer, Mr. Max Williams. Max, are French toast sticks new to you?
I mean, I don't really eat anything breakfast at all. I mean, I've had them before, but I mean, they're a cool invention. The only breakfast I will eat is bagels and lox. That's about it.
It's pretty great. Yeah.
It's amazing.
I'm on the road and I almost got a bagel and lox when I blew into town at a 24-hour bodega type place. But I think I might have a new rule for myself. I don't think I should get bagels at 2 a.m. from a place that's open, not exclusively as a diner. They were selling lots of stuff, you know?
Speaking of diners, by the way, do you know what the criteria for a diner is? I just found this out recently. It just has to have an open kitchen and a bar with seats. And mainly they're known for serving breakfast food all day, but specifically that's the main criteria for something being considered a diner.
Then that explains why a lot of things could be called diners in general. You know, there was that kind of there was that fad where you would see people go to juice bars, or juice diners, or oxygen bars. Now that seems like a good grift, but it still has nothing on cereal. When we left off in our previous episode, we teased one of our favorite weirdest aspects of the modern breakfast cereal game, which is, of course, the marketing, the merchandising, the mascots. You know, it's look, a lot of this stuff became geared for children. It started out often as a food of convenience, or even more importantly, a purported health food. And then they started realizing that if you wanted to get the sale done, if you wanted to get that box into the shopping cart and into the household kitchen, you needed the kids on your side. This is something that Old Dirty Bastard would point out famously in Wu-Tang, right? Wu-Tang is for the kids. And breakfast cereal is for the kids if you want to make a profit. And that's why in 1909, Kellogg's, that we talked a lot about previously, they introduced the first ever cereal box prize. And this happened at the same time that the covers of these boxes were getting more and more interesting and marketing increasingly toward children. Do you guys remember cereal box prizes?
That used Absolutely. To
be, that was the oh, yeah. only time I would like hang with cereal as a kid because I knew there was stuff at the bottom of the bag.
Yeah, and it was always one of those kind of like disappointing kind of things where like it was more about the expectation than it was about what you actually got when you got to the bottom. And then they started doing this clever thing, or maybe it was the other way around, where you wouldn't actually get the thing in the box. You'd get like, you'd have to mail in box tops or there'd be some kind of little coupon. It reminds me of like the decoder ring and Cracker Jacks, you know, from A Christmas Story. He didn't actually get the thing right away. He had to mail in a bunch of like box. There was a ton actually to get the decoder ring. And then it was all just a marketing ploy in and of itself, which
drink
as we know.
More Ovaltine.
Drink more Ovaltine. I think we talked about that in an episode of Ridiculous History. I'm pretty certain.
We did an episode of basically about Ovaltine.
Yeah, that's right. The chocolatey mineral based drink. And again, you know, let's go back to our buddy John Harvey Kellogg, who initially, you know, was trying to promote healthy, clean living. And then his brother kind of took that whole concept and ran with it, besmirching, honestly, the legacy of his brother by, you know, having kind of sugary cereals. Originally, cereal companies like Kellogg didn't really see the value in marketing directly to kids, but then it became pretty clear relatively quickly, like I think by the early 1900s, that this was absolutely the way to go. This was the play.
100%. I mean, they also started, let's talk about that first prize for kids in cereal. You had to buy not one, but two boxes of cornflakes. And like you said, Noel, they had to prove they had purchased these either through sending something in the mail or going directly to the grocery store where they bought these. And if you could prove you bought two boxes of cornflakes, you got a book, like a pamphlet called the Funny Jungleland Moving Pictures Booklet. And this is something that all other cereal makers paid attention to. By the time you get to the middle of the 20th century, especially in post-war years, you see that advertisers have kind of taken parents out of the equation. Parents are a footnote. They're relegated to something like, this is part of a balanced breakfast, or this is nutrition. The rest of the ads are all going to be about, look at these great bears. Look at Big Yellow on the Corn Pops, or look at this really creepy clown who wants to sell you sugar crisp. That Good one's Lord. Especially traumatic.
Yeah, you just showed it to Max and I first thing in the morning before we recorded, and I think we were both somewhat triggered. Can we hear a little clip of this monstrosity and just picture the absolute creepiest clown you could possibly imagine emerging from a chicken coop, kind of, that then he stands up and rips through this backdrop made of paper and then proceeds to sit down at this little table and give us the spiel.
Take it from Crinkle. That's me. The best breakfast under the big top is post-sugar rice Crinkles. So crinkly, so delicious, so different. Each grain of rice in sugar rice Crinkles is crinkled with honey and sugar.
So if we walk you through this, you can see the guy burst through the weird paper screen and he's got what Stephen King has called double zero kind of serial killer eyes. Like all there's no real pupil iris. They just kind of suck you in. His makeup because
the deadlights.
Deadlights. His makeup because it's a black and white ad spot. It all looks like his face is white and black. And I don't know. It looks like if he opened his mouth and just held it open, blood or ichor would seep out of it. It's weird.
It's because of it's beautifully filmed in a lot of ways, but because of the contrast of those blacks are so black and the whites are so white, and then the separation from the foreground and the background are really well done. But you're right, because of how black the makeup like around his mouth is, it looks like how you think of like blood and like Psycho or something might look.
And we're from the post-Gacy world, so our
that's the thing.
Cultural understanding of clowns is way different. Anyway, people loved all these mascots. Aside from, I know we went out of our way to show you the spooky one. We're going to talk about some more. But when we, when we're talking about commercials, I want to give a shout out to Sugar Crisp. This commercial was a game changer. It's the first animated TV commercial in the world of cereal. And it has three bears, Handy, Dandy, and Candy. And years later, these guys would all be kind of consolidated into the singular Sugar Bear.
I think I made the slightly off color comment that Sugar Bear looks like he's maybe a little under the influence.
You most definitely did make that comment.
Yeah, but and I think I took it a little further. Like he looks like you would kind of picture some sort of jazz junkie, you know? Like, I mean, he's just got these like really barely open eyes, but he doesn't seem like high on jazz cigarettes. He seems more like he's on the stuff.
You know? Oh, I remember this guy. Yeah. Yeah.
Very lackadaisical, you know, like
always wearing long sleeves. I'm saying
that's no. bare sleeves.
That's not true. You can find pictures of him in more of a chill t-shirt summer outfit. But if you know, we're applying adult mindsets to these cartoons. And in many cases, when you're a kid, these just seem really cool. You're buying the idea as much as you're buying the food. There was, I think it was Cookie Crisp, I want to say, had...
Cookie Crisp.
Right.
It was a cop. There's a cop and a rabid dog, kind of. And
And then there was, of course, we know all the big ones named the Monster Pantheon with Chocula and Frankenberry and Yummy Mummy. Was that one of them?
Yeah, and now that's the thing that they release for the nostalgia play, you know, right around the spooky seasons.
Yeah, just like what do you call it? Just like ectoplasma coolers when those got re-released by Hi-C or something. We also see that Sugar Crisp is a pioneer in focusing on children. Roy Rogers, who had this very popular TV show in his day, started cutting parents out of the equation almost entirely and talking directly to kids in his TV show. He would say, ask your mom to get a package of our favorite cereal, Post Sugar Crisp. They were moving boxes and other companies didn't want to be left behind. Kellogg's makes Corn Pops in 1950. 1952, they come back with Frosted Flakes. Trix is way older than I had thought it was. It's from 1954. And, you know, it's weird because we talk a lot about the role of sugar in, you know, it's insidious in the modern West. But I wasn't aware of this back in the day, in the 1950s especially, the amount of sugar in these things was advertised as a bonus. It was a plus. Like, you don't have to add sugar.
We had talked about that kind of in the last episode. It's just, I think the research just wasn't there, you know, on some of the long-term health effects of eating too much sugar, not to mention with children. And then we start to see, you know, rising cases of things like childhood diabetes. And I bet you could draw a line directly to, you know, among other things, you know, like sugary snacks and such, but to breakfast cereals. And all this marketing that we're talking about, you know, this obviously continued and just kind of kept at a fever pace up until today. I mean, I guess we don't really, most of the cereal mascots that we see today are some future iteration of a legacy one, you know, that kind of started in this golden age of cereal mascots. You don't see a lot of new cereals launched. It's usually some new flavor of Rice Krispies. It's got some movie tie-in or, you know, I think, what is it? Frosted Flakes has like an Avatar tie-in where like Tony the Tiger is like dressed in Avatar gear, but they didn't make him blue, weirdly. But we also see some kind of more drastic, let's say, evolution of some of these mascots. In the 70s, Lucky Charms was repped not by Lucky the Leprechaun, but by Waldo the Wizard. Mm-hmm. And the famous catchphrase, "They're magically delicious," wasn't a thing. Waldo referred to Lucky Charms as being, let me see if I can even do this, "Ibble de Bibble delicious." Ibble de Bibble delicious. I bet that's a mouthful. That's like a supercalifragilistic kind
that's
of situation.
That's like Crinkles territory, man. I don't love it.
Are we surprised that didn't catch on?
It's no Wubba Lubba Dub Dub or
Wubba
whatever.
Lubba Dub Dub.
But a big reason that Lucky won out was because of market testing. So, like, I mean, they're doing these characters in the same way that, you know, movies are focus group tested and things like that. They actually get, like, kids in a room to respond, see which one they respond to more. And while Waldo won out eventually, you know, at first, Lucky came down and destroyed him, totally erased him from history.
Because of the stereotypes, right? Who doesn't love a good stereotype?
That's a good point, yeah. But and weirdly, you know, he's still around today. They've kind of, you know, they don't really do as many. I don't have cable, so I don't really know if I'm missing something, but I don't see as many Lucky Charms ads, you know, with the leprechaun, ooh, Lucky the Leprechaun, doing kind of a full, you know, stereotypical Irish lilt.
Ah, yeah. You know, the only thing I've seen that references Lucky Charms at all in recent years is a parody from Rick and Morty, from Interdimensional Cable, where they have a very not charming serial commercial. And
it has some cannibalism.
That's right. Yeah, I do remember that one.
Well, is it okay? Is it cannibalism though? Now I'll be clear, I'm not condoning the actions of those children, but is a leprechaun to be taken as human, or is it more like eating a related primate?
A muskrat.
Yes.
Well, actually, if I remember correctly, which I do remember correctly, they're not actually eating the leprechaun, but they're trying to get the cereal out of the leprechaun.
Right.
So
right.
It is not cannibalism. It's just
I mean, there's some juices on there at that point.
Yeah. There's
mascot.
Pretty disturbed people listening to this right now.
You know, exactly. Aghast.
Is your underwear in need of a refresh? Meet Tomboy X, makers of the original boxer briefs for women, queer-founded and queer-run. Tomboy X designs sustainable, gender-inclusive underwear and apparel in sizes 3 extra small to 6 extra large. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at TomboyX.com. Shop now on TomboyX.com.
Hey, Noel, have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh, boy, have I ever, Ben.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Well, here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avalon Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at AvalonWaterways.com.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
But I mean, you know, we have ones that we know, like Lucky the Leprechaun, Tony the Tiger, which actually debuted back in the early 1950s and I'm just guessing here, but I have a feeling that Tony got buffer and buffer and buffer as went on. Guys, I bet the original Tony was more like a Tigger, the Tiger kind of slinky fellow, and then started definitely juicing.
And there's still information about nutritional benefits for the parents who are going to read the back of the label, or they're going to see a splash that says, you know, with all your daily iron or fiber or potassium or whatever. It seems there was this trend for focusing on a couple of nutritional benefits. But this, again, like we teased earlier, kind of goes to the wayside through the 60s. Cereal boxes are talking less about the benefits that were touted during the days of granula and more about the taste, the fun, the flavor, now with more berries, you know what I mean? And they didn't need to convince people that you should eat cereal in the morning because that had already become part of culture, at least in the United States. So it was a foregone conclusion. People would say, oh, yeah, it's morning. I've got a kid. I got to get some milk. I got to get some cereal. That's how we do things. And so now the industry is in this really cool, weird place where they can say, okay, we know everybody needs cereal. Now we just need to help you figure out which one to buy. Mm-hmm. And we can add all kinds of bells and whistles for that purpose.
Yeah, and the message kind of pivoted away from nutrition and toward like pep. You know what I mean? Like it gives you energy. It gives you the energy to take on the day, even if you're a little kid. And, you know, you mentioned the idea of marketing these things as being fun, as being like experiential. Like if you eat the leprechaun cereal, you're basically a leprechaun at this point, you know? Mm-hmm. Eating Frosted Flakes is going to turn you into a cartoon tiger, at least from within. It's like an Animorphs kind of situation.
Keep your head on swivel. It's an adventure to eat tricks because you gotta go quick and make sure that rabbit doesn't sneak around and try to pull a heist.
Yeah, you know? That rabbit's on drugs too, by the way, just for the record. They're in some sort of magical fairyland that I believe is it's either the children have accidentally eaten some mushrooms that they shouldn't have in the woods, you know, and they're hallucinating this whole experience. That's just my that's just my backstory. But yeah, I mean, you started seeing things like, you know, Cocoa Pebbles, which were now, were Cocoa Pebbles always tied in with the Flintstones? Because the Flintstones are old. So, I mean, I kind of think that probably Cocoa and Fruity Pebbles were always a television tie-in from the start.
Yeah, the Flintstones did exist well before the Post Company started making pebble varieties of food, like Cocoa Pebbles or Fruity Pebbles. But I also want to say, and I don't want to flip any wigs over at Hanna-Barbera. But the Flintstones were always kind of sellouts, right? Like they did smoking ads back in the day. I can't remember which brand of cigarette it was, but they were all about it.
Right. Early Flintstones cartoons were in black and white and they occupied a lot of the same space as, you know, those kind of like those craft theater kind of shows, you know, that were totally sponsored whole hog by a brand. And that was really the only reason some of these shows existed in the first place, you know, was to sell the product. I mean, that's always kind of how television has been. It wasn't like, okay, we're going to put out amazing art and then maybe sell some ads. It's no, we're going to sell some ads and we have to put something around the ads. So we're going to call that television.
Right. And so I looked it up. It is Winston Cigarettes.
Yeah, it is.
They also did beer commercials as well, which is really kind of, you know, it's kind of a jarring to your system because we think of the Flintstones very much as a children's show. Mm. But it's like, get your cigarettes and your beer.
Well, the parents were watching too.
Right.
Well, but also the Flintstones was kind of a cartoon equivalent of like the Honeymooners. So it really was kind of built around these very adult tropes. Mm-hmm. And they were like, you know, marital disputes and things like that, only surrounded by like, you know, animals that served as household appliances.
Yeah. And so we see that that Cocoa Pebbles, which is kind of a new iteration of Sugar Crisp, is the first cereal that is made as a kind of merchandising spinoff of a TV show. It's made from the Flintstones. And the as were Winston Cigarettes. Kidding, Winston Cigarettes not related. Flintstones just did a very poor taste ad for them. They also said, look, kids, don't just think of our fun and frolicky mascots. Think of all the cool stuff we can do. It's cooler than the cereal that your friends eat at school. We can coat things with different bright colors, fruity pebbles. We can add freeze-dried fruit or marshmallows, things that look like fruit. We can make them different shapes, you know, just like fruit snacks would be later with gushers and fruit by the foot and so on. And with the sugar thing, because again, people didn't know how bad sugar could be, it gives you energy. So they're kind of advertising this thing that's a 5-hour energy drink, a Red Bull, a rave aesthetic, right? And then it comes with a cool anthropomorphic animal cartoon that you can hang out with and will approve of you. So this, like, on every level, this is really brilliant. Oh, and then you participate. The prizes. You could win stuff. You could enter sweepstakes. Like we mentioned with Wheaties, you could feel like you were in some way interacting with the celebrity or athlete that you loved and looked up to. And then we talked about Grape Nuts. I feel like we should go, there were adult cereals. It wasn't all for kids.
You mentioned Grape Nuts, and it just reminded me to mention Sir Grape Fellow, which is not a cereal that I was familiar with, but it was kind of in that same kind of marketed to children's product line. And by the way, last thing, Cocoa Pebbles and Fruity Pebbles were actually repurposed Rice Crinkles.
Yeah, this is fascinating. And, you know, we could spend, Noel, you mentioned before we're recording today, we could spend so much time just doing episodes about individual cereal mascots. It's surprising how many might be unfamiliar to us today, but were a huge deal in their time. There was this guy named Big Yella, whose job was just to sell you sugar corn pops. And if you look at him, he was in a lot of stuff. If you look at him, he's just a semi-ridiculous blonde man with a big chin and a huge, that looks to be a 60, 70 gallon hat. And
kind of looks like the Curious George dad.
Yeah.
you know, the man with the big yellow hat. And it does appear that you can get Big Yellow as a Funko Pop figure if you wish. It looks like Kellogg is leaning into this nostalgia, you know, play as they do with so many of their things. And I believe that sugar corn pops is maybe now just corn pops. I think they dropped the sugar from the name, but it looks like the same little nuggets.
Yeah. And then he got Big Yellow. He got his whole thing was he's so rich that he's corn pops, I guess.
He looks like an oil magnate or something.
Yeah.
Like some sort of like he's got life on the range. He's like, I'm drilling for black gold.
Mm-hmm. And then he got replaced. He got phased out and replaced with a porcupine. But maybe he's still out there doing things in a Big Yellow style. All right. We're working live. Moving on. The thing you need to know is that there were still healthy or there were still cereals marketing themselves as healthy. Wheaties, Corn Flakes, Grape Nuts, all kinds of things with bran in the title. And they talked about, you know, you'd see diet fads reflected in cereal. So if you were counting calories, you'd see the advertisements coming out that said this has, you know, just blank number of calories. And all you need is, and there was a lot of stuff about one bowl. One bowl contains 100% of your daily, you know, requirements of blah, blah, blah. And remember, there's a great Saturday Night Live commercial about that, about the fiber pyramid. Do you guys remember that one?
No, I just remember colon blow.
That's colon blow.
Saturday Night Live. Okay. Yeah.
that's exactly it. Thank you. Yeah. Check out the colon blow commercial if you want a sense of how far this
is. Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
One of my favorite, though, in terms of just like the most bland sounding kind of adult cereals that are like meant. So that's the thing. It's sort of fractured, or there was not a backlash exactly, but they realized, oh, we can also sell this to, you know, to adults like we did in the early days. So the things like Basic Four. By General Mills. It's literally just like, you know, oat flakes with nuts and vanilla clusters. And I almost guarantee you has the same amount of sugar in it as some of those kids' cereals. It's all a grift, man.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. And then people said, you know, cereal doesn't always have to be a breakfast food. It could also be a snack. You're on the go. You're on a hike. You're on a trip with the kids. Or you can make it more than just a meal by itself. You can use it in recipes. This was very clever because they wanted to get past that. They wanted to expand past that association with breakfast. So you would see things like the Cheerios recipe booklet, crush them up, use them like breadcrumbs, use them to bread pork chops, or there are all kinds of crushed cereal toppings in cakes and sweets mm-hmm. now too, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the one that comes to mind immediately is Rice Krispie Treats.
Oh,
because,
yeah.
You know, it's sort of like how Elmer's Glue has kind of like figured out how to rebrand to be no longer really a glue company, but a slime making company, you know? So they sell all these kits that are literally just glue and glitter and like whatever the other ingredient you need. I think it's some kind of soap to make slime that the kids used to be super into. I don't know if that fad is still around, but yeah, Rice Krispies, you know, had it figured out. They sold you like a family activity, right?
Yeah,
making Rice Krispie treats with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like Jell-O Jigglers. Remember those? It was literally just Jell-O that you cut out with a cookie cutter. And therefore, now it's a whole other thing. They can market with the same exact stuff. But then you started getting pre-made, those cereal bars you're talking about.
Right.
And Rice Krispie Treats, you know, pre-packaged. That's a little more of a modern innovation. We'll get to that.
Yeah. And I got to say, you know, I just never got into Rice Krispie Treats. I don't have too much of a sweet tooth, but people love them. Love them. I think to me, they've always just felt like a letdown snack, like when you get a fruit cup and it's mostly melon.
Ugh, yeah,
you know what I mean?
Grapes. Ugh, can't stand them.
Yeah, it's like honeydew. It's like, why is it when Cantaloupe gets invited to a party, it thinks they can bring his dumbass friend Honeydew along?
Mm-hmm.
You don't get a plus one, Cantaloupe.
More like honey don't, am I right? But we were teasing the modern era a little bit,
yeah.
And you know, things were kind of in flux, right? And then it all kind of evened out. Like, I there really haven't been too many cereal innovations that we could speak of, or like, again, new cereals, new exciting cereal brands. A lot of it was just kind of repurposed and tweaked marketing campaigns for existing brands. But by the 70s and 80s, they were really kind of playing against the whole sugar thing, like removing the word sugar from sugar pops and stuff like that, because we did start to see research. And again, this rise in childhood obesity and diabetes and things like that, that were of concern. And even in the early 70s, we had folks like Dr. Atkins, you know, of the Atkins diet fame, talking about how carbs were bad for you. And what is cereal if not just a big old bowl of carbs?
Right. Just like the early days of the granola paste. This stuff was, this was kind of a reckoning, right? Those grains did not look as healthy anymore. People started to question some of the more out there health claims from cereals of yesteryear. And they started saying, hey, there's also just there's so much sugar in this that it might not look like a bowl of cake, but in some situations, am I feeding my kid and myself a bowl of cake? So healthy cereals double down. They say, we got all the vitamins, we got all the protein, the fiber, whatever you are seeking, my grocery store sojourner, you have found it in this box. Sugar Crisps gets renamed Golden Crisp. This is also when we see a lot of people pulling sugar out of the mm-hmm. thing, like sugar corn pops now.
Because like you said, it used to be almost a selling point.
Right.
So they wanted to highlight that. And now they kind of wanted to hide it. But
yeah.
And they probably did, you know, reduce the amount of sugar from those early just, you know, knock your socks off levels. But certainly sugar is still part of the equation because that's the whole point. It's supposed to taste good. It's supposed to taste sweet.
And then we get to something very clever. This is very Edward Bernays style. They know there's still a viable market in selling sugar to kids in the morning, right? They know they can still sell that stuff all the time. And there might be some adults who are buying it just because they've been eating it themselves for years. But they knew they had to fight back against the sugar thing, the health concerns, which are very valid. This is where we see the introduction of the balanced breakfast, or the complete breakfast that becomes the balanced breakfast. They say, okay, we can't just keep telling these people you can eat Cinnamon Toast Crunch and you'll be absolutely fine and that it's healthy for you to do that every day of your life. But we can say it's healthy as part of a larger breakfast. Orange juice, fruit, milk, maybe some eggs. You throw a bowl of cereal in, the companies are still making money, but it also seems less egregious for the consumer. That's brilliant. And I imagine this is around the same time we started seeing that trope of sitcom and movie fame, where somebody walks down and they're like in a hurry to go to work or school, and there's this elaborate like 8-course breakfast. And then someone, what do they always do? They take like a bite of a waffle, or they grab a cup of coffee. They're like, thanks, hon, gotta go.
It's continental though, Ben. It's continental.
I love being incontinent.
No, it's true. I mean, I do like, I like sampling the mini muffins. That's always nice. And, you know, yeah, I don't want to be a food waster, but that's why they're mini. You can just try a few different ones and see which ones you like.
Do you know what I'm talking about, though, with the trope of that huge breakfast in film?
Oh, in the commercials?
In sitcoms and film.
And commercials, I would agree.
Be, you know, so it's always angry.
These platters, and that really is more like a European breakfast. Like, I mean, like in Germany and, you know, other countries in Europe, a lot of times they'll eat a really heavy breakfast of like sausage and all kinds of crazy stuff. So that's probably to some degree where the inspiration came from. I got to ask you guys real quick, this isn't in the outline or anything we've talked about directly, but how do you think that the introduction of like the food pyramid fit into all this? Because if I'm reading this correctly, I believe that wasn't really established until around the 70s, like as kind of a response to a lot of this marketing, you know, like fight marketing with marketing. But apparently the actual arrangement of the food pyramid isn't quite right and has changed over the years as well.
Yeah, it's the food pyramid, or the basis of it, is from Sweden, I believe. And, you're right, it's the 1970s. But I know there's been a lot of debate about trade groups and industries having their thumb on the scale here. Because there will be there will be pushback from maybe the meat or dairy groups, from lobbying interest in the U.S. And they'll say, hey, this is not a good representation of what we do. Or then there will be a health group that says, hey, you're playing down the link between, you know, heart disease and eating nothing but hamburgers all day or whatever. So the food pyramid, or healthy eating pyramid, or whatever you call it, can be pretty pretty divisive. Might be good for an episode, too. I know right now the food pyramid in the U.S., I think, has been replaced by something called My Plate. And My Plate,
a little more dynamic, maybe, that like takes into account individual body types and diets. Because the original food pyramid, the whole big, broad base of it is cereal. Bread, rice, pasta, 6 to 11 servings. There are folks that would heavily argue that's a bad idea. And then you got fruits and vegetables, but a lot of fruits contain a lot of sugar too. Sure. So sometimes probably best to favor the vegetables and eat the fruits maybe a little more sparingly, depending, you know, on your dietary requirements. But I completely agree with you, Ben, that this had to be. And also the food pyramid was introduced in Sweden in the 70s, but it wasn't introduced in the U.S. until the 90s.
Is that weird?
It's very, very weird. But I think you're right. It probably is a product of lobbying to a degree to have that big old foundation of cereal and bread and pasta, you know? And we're talking about companies with all these cereal companies that are old. They have a lot of influence. You know, they were first to market and they represent a lot of money, and a lot of lawmakers pay attention to money.
Oh, yeah. Spoiler alert, folks. And then if we go a little bit further, we see something called the Nutrition and Labeling and Education Act of 1990. And this said that all products had to have that list of nutrition facts, which we're all familiar with now. That's why if you turn around one of these boxes of cereal, you see the ingredient list and you see the percentage of the stuff this product contains. And this was meant to help people see what they were putting in their bodies. This also helped cereal peak, because people still thought of it as a breakfast food up until 1996. And then apparently it's been on a bit of a decline since then.
I wonder why. This is what I can tell you. There's so many more options, and we are just a more, in general, health-conscious society. Whether that actually ends up in practice or not, I think marketers are hip to it. And, you know, it's a lot harder to market dessert for breakfast kind of situation. So you really don't see much many commercials unless you're literally watching kids' shows, but I think, or kids' channels. But even then, I'm pretty sure that a lot of that stuff has had to be pared down, or they can't advertise certain benefits or whatever like they used to. There's one thing we missed just from the late 70s. I just wanted to add, you mentioned the whole idea of that balanced breakfast and all of that stuff. In 1977, Wheaties claimed they provided 25% of your daily vitamin needs. It also obviously paired that brand with famous sports players, sports ballers, you know, and that became, again, we talked about that a little bit in the last episode, sort of like a brand that you wanted to be associated with. Because, I mean, I think of all the cereals, Wheaties are probably one of the better ones, but I think there's a little sugar even in Wheaties, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, you eat a Wheatie and I taste a little sweetness, kind of like clinging to those brown flakes. 4.1 grams. Per 0.75 cups. That's a lot.
That's a lot. Let's also consider that serving size is tricky.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
Hey, Noel, have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh, boy, have I ever, Ben.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Well, here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avalon Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at AvalonWaterways.com.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Okay, so we got to introduce the bad things to the good things, right? So cereal's in a little bit of a decline, but there are other factors at play that are influencing this. For a long, long time, I would argue this continues today, serving size portions were not what were sold on the box. You would get a box of, candy or something, and you wouldn't know unless you looked at it that this was meant to be multiple servings of that candy. And kind of cereal's the same way, but this has changed due to something we're talking about off air. As the popularity of cereal declines a little bit, it's also becoming a prime example for an insidious packaging conspiracy called shrinkflation. Shrinkflation is where you're paying the same price for something, a product you've probably bought in the past, but you're getting less of it because of the way it's packaged. Like if you took this little coffee cup here and you looked at the bottom, then the bottom would be higher. You're paying the same amount for less coffee. And Noel, you brought up a great point off air that this is happening a lot with cereal, right? Or anything that needs air in its packaging.
It's the perfect candidate because what's happening is the boxes are getting bigger. It'll be family size, right? It'll say that on the box. It's this massive box, probably to fill out more space in the coveted cereal aisle. Again, I'm just kind of like, you know, conjecturing here. But again, it comes in a bag inside that is half full of air, and the actual, you know, net weight of the cereal in that box, while it might be advertised as larger, if you look at it historically, it's getting smaller.
Yeah.
And that's a very concerted effort on the part of these companies to save money.
And they also, we should talk about this. Grocery stores are built with the same level of consideration that goes into making casinos. And cereal companies will pay a premium rate to have their boxes placed on certain shelves. You know, something maybe in the eye line of a six-year-old, for instance, right?
Absolutely. And you'll also notice that like store brands, they don't come in boxes. They just come in bags straight out. So to even have the bag in the box is clearly an unnecessary marketing play in the first place. And it's kind of meant to disguise how not cute the actual cereal is, A, right. And B, how little of it there might be.
So at this point, want to give a big shout out to Harold Balzer, who is a food researcher, had this wonderful conversation with NPR and just kicks all these crazy facts. One thing he says is most people take about 12 minutes to eat in the morning time. And there are easier ways to do that than eating cereal because he's just talking through the mechanics. He's like, okay, you have a bowl of cereal. Now you have a dirty bowl you have to clean. Now you have a dirty spoon. You got to clean this stuff. And a lot of times people are just kind of eating on the go. If you are sort of like Max or me, then you're one of the 18% of Americans who don't eat breakfast. That's an increase from 1977 when it was just 6%. And now people are eating like, you know, granola bars, cereal bars, fast food. And this has been addressed by the cereal companies as well. Now they have the little disposable single serving cereal packs. I always thought of those as like airplane cereal.
Those are fun. Remember you get the variety packs?
Yeah.
When we were kids, those were hugely popular.
Yeah.
And maybe my mom wouldn't buy me a whole box of Fruity Pebbles, but she'd buy the variety pack that just had a couple of Fruity Pebbles mixed in with like the quote unquote more healthy cereals. All this leads me to ask a question. And I don't know if you guys know the answer. I have a guess, but are people eating breakfast less in general? And is there research that maybe is determined that breakfast maybe isn't that most important meal of the day that we were always kind of sold?
Yes, people are eating, at least in the United States, people are eating breakfast less often in general. Like we had that statistic we just mentioned with going from 6% of people not eating breakfast in 77 to 18% not eating breakfast at all today. As for the second part of the question, it kind of, honestly, it depends on your lifestyle. It depends on, you know, do you live in an agrarian society where you're eating breakfast and you're going out and doing demanding physical labor from, you know, until the sun goes down? In that case, then you probably do want something pretty hearty in the beginning of your day. But then if you're in a hurry to a place where you don't have a lot of demanding physical labor and you can kind of take a break for a snack when you want, I don't know, maybe the equation changes. I don't think a lot of people deify breakfast as much as they did in the past.
Right. And again, you know, this is the kind of statistic that would have been absolutely red meat for these cereal companies. You know, breakfast, the most important meal of the day. You got to get your calories in, you know, first thing. And now we're also living in a time where people are doing more like functional fasting as well, where they maybe won't eat until dinner, like in that works for them. So it really, again, depends on who you ask. Depends on what your lifestyle is.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't eaten breakfast in years. I don't eat till 2 p.m. every day. I do intermittent fasting. And
you're chipper as a daisy.
I know.
You know, at all times. Chipper as a whatever. You get what I'm getting at.
Do you drink coffee, Max?
I do. I drink coffee black.
Yeah. Okay. Looks like we dine at the same conceptual breakfast club. But yeah, this is pretty interesting because now that we are at sort of the current the current state of cereal, what we can tell you for sure is that it's probably not going to go away anytime soon. Nostalgia is a heck of a drug. Also, the marketing folks working for cereal companies have a lot of skin in the game. They've got a lot of experience. They know what works, and they've shown a pattern of adjusting to different cultural moments in society. There are even space cereals. That's a real thing. It's on the regular menu of NASA astronauts. I found that they have five or six different kinds of cereal: Bran Chex, Corn Flakes, Rice Krispies. Oh, and weirdly enough, they also have grits with butter. I don't know what grits taste like in space. I'm already kind of picky about them on Earth.
I also don't know what grits taste like without butter, and I don't want to know. Okay? I don't want to know.
Have you heard about sugar and grits? That's a Rubicon too far for me.
Yeah. Sugary, buttery grits. I could see the it's sort of like cream of wheat, you know, at that point. To me, grits are always meant to be savory. I like shrimp and grits, you know, or cheese grits, things like that. You put pimento cheese in grits. It's actually quite good. I'm a recent pimento cheese convert, really.
Oh, really? Stuff. Welcome.
Yeah.
Well,
because it was just so orange. It always kind of weirded me out. And the texture's a little odd. But man, on a burger, you know, it actually melts really nicely. Boy, is it fantastic. Before we wrap this episode, can we talk a little bit about some like maybe more global breakfast foods and, you know, people that maybe aren't eating cereal? We've got some fun ones here. And I think each of us also brought some surprises.
Yeah. What you got?
Oh, well, we've got, you know, the Egyptian breakfast. In ancient Egypt's peasants and workers would drink some beer, eat some bread, and eat a soup or even onions before they would head out to their slave labor, you know, building the pyramids or whatever. It's interesting because, you know, the concept of the modern American breakfast, or just the idea of breakfast foods in general, really is a construct of advertising.
Sure.
You know, again, thanks to our buddy Edward Bernays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We also know that at one point, some members of the clergy felt that breakfast was a sin. That's the holy breakfast. That's where you don't eat anything. Dominican priest Thomas Aquinas said that you would be eating too soon. You would be committing the sin of prepere. So this meant, to him, it was kind of gluttony. It's like, why can't you wait? And he was telling people, you need to be like Max Williams. Wait till 2 p.m. That's what he was saying in the 13th century.
Well, and then like in the Industrial Revolution, when everything was determined by the workday, and often you maybe wouldn't even get a lunch break. Who knows? You had to kind of take your meals when you could. So loading up first thing was really kind of the only way to fly. And they would eat things like anchovies and oysters and, of course, drink tons of wine and ale. This is all before 11 a.m., you know, so people were kind of getting blasted and then working in factories
right.
that were very dangerous. I wonder mortality rates were so high.
Huge. Also, water still wasn't as safe as it has become now. But yeah, they were going hard before noon. Which is still kind of that before noon or before five is still kind of an arbitrary rule, right?
100%. Are you guys familiar with the famous Finnish breakfast known as Bluru? Bluru, it's got the umlaut over the O and the O. B-L-O-R-O.
That I'm not familiar with.
It is literally a cup of black coffee, a shot of vodka, and a cigarette.
Oh, oh wow. Yes. All right. Off to Finland we go.
Yes, indeed. There's a Reddit page with a picture of it, and it's literally like on a little saucer, all three of these items.
You know what I never understood is, I've had it before just because I felt like it was a win in Rome situation, but the full Irish or the full English breakfast.
It's bangers and beans, right?
It's so much stuff. And it's so you could get tomatoes, beans, blood sausage, bacon, probably some sausage links and eggs. And then you usually have some toast. Oh, you might have mushrooms, but that's the stuff.
Yeah, I see that. Oh,
it's
my God.
A lot.
And just It is a lot, but I will say this, and this is a thing that I learned from Gordon Ramsay not terribly long ago. If you take tomatoes and mushrooms and you just put them in a pan on low heat, they kind of start to cook in their own juices, and the tomato gets a little crinkly, sugar crinkles. But that's sort of the style of preparing those for a full English breakfast, the tomatoes that are kind of charred and really nice because it's like multiple bites. It is a lot, but I might also go the way of the sitcom and just eat a little bit here and there and kind of, you know, compose some perfect bites and then move on. I personally love a nice breakfast, but usually only on the weekend, you know?
I'll cook breakfast on a weekend, but the way that I cook is very, very slow and considered and, oh, what do we have here? Very well. So I'm usually, if I start cooking breakfast, it's, to be charitable, we call it a brunch. One of my last breakfast shout outs, the Netherlands, there's this thing called hagelslag. It's a slice of bread that has chocolate sprinkles on it. Have you guys heard of this?
No, please.
No, that's it. I didn't believe it.
And I thought there was more. No, it's amazing.
They have butter so the sprinkles don't fall off. But yeah, that's it. That's literally it.
And somehow it has less grams of sugar.
Somehow, yes. But this is I think we should also do an episode just about breakfast because that is such
absolutely
a uniquely different thing. You know, it's always weird. Like you go to, you just walk by different like regionally specific restaurants and you see that not all of them serve some kind of breakfast dish, right? Like the idea of what people in China might eat for breakfast isn't something that's really caught on in the United States, at least in the parts I've visited.
100%. And that's what kind of was getting at earlier. I sometimes like eat a bowl of ramen for breakfast with like a poached egg in it, you know,
that's great.
Just leftovers. I kind of resent being held to the standard of what is and is not a breakfast food or what time those types of food should be consumed. I like to live on the edge. Have you guys, last one for me, have you guys heard of Welsh rabbit or Welsh rarebit?
Rarebit, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It contains neither Welsh nor rabbit. It is a piece of toast with kind of a cheesy gravy kind of melt concoction over it, often served with a poached egg. And anyone who's a Paul Thomas Anderson fan will remember that Daniel Day-Lewis's character from Phantom Thread orders breakfast with bacon, scones, butter, cream, jam, a pot of lapsang souchong tea, and some sausages, and an order of Welsh rarebit with a poached egg not too runny.
The poached egg not too runny. We are going to call it a day. There are all sorts of breakfasts that we want to talk about. And I think part of it is because outside of Max, Noel, I don't know about you, but I might be getting hungry. I might have a little bit of a nosh ahead.
Get that daytime bagel.
Yeah, daytime bagel. No more 2 a.m. bagels for me, guys. This is the beginning of a whole new era. And we hope that you join us and give us your thoughts about breakfast around the world. This is one that's going to be pretty exciting for us. In the meantime, thanks as always to our super producer and research associate for this week's series, Mr. Max Williams. Thanks to Jonathan Strickland. I actually talked with Jonathan just very briefly through text. I was trying to prank text him and I didn't know if it was his number or if it was someone else on my phone, but it is his number. He sends his regards. I don't know whether they're warm regards or like cold, sinister regards. He said he is looking forward to joining us soon. So the rumors are true. We are in contact.
Don't tempt me with a good time, Ben.
Okay. Well, instead, what I'm saying is the Quister might show up.
Yeah. We've been teasing that for weeks now.
Like a year?
And where is he? Where is this Quister? I don't believe he exists anymore. And this would be the exact opportune moment for him to pop up if we weren't already an hour into this podcast.
Oh, yeah. We got
to
go.
We wouldn't do that to you, ridiculous historians. But
yeah, we would.
Yeah, I don't know. We tried. I mean, really, I'm actually kind of blown away by how much there was to talk about regarding the history of cereal. But it also kind of makes so much sense because it's really tied in with a lot of different threads, you know, from history. In terms of like the kind of holistic health food movement to marketing to cartoon characters to breakfast foods. And I mean, it's just, I don't know. It's a whole ball of wax. And it's been a pleasure discussing it with you fellas.
Yes, agreed. And likewise. So tune in next week, folks. We're going to be exploring some even more bizarre, strange tales of yesteryear that won't have, they won't be related to cereal, I think. But if they are, we'll bring some props. We'll eat some cereal while we do our next episodes.
Huge thanks to Christopher Asiotis here in Spirit, Eve's Jeffcoat, gallivanting around this wide world of sports, doing great work. And gosh, to you, Max, and of course to you, Benjamin.
Thank you, Benjamin. And of course, big thanks to all those wonderful cereal mascots, except for that Crinkles guy.
We'll see you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Avalon Waterways. Ben, are you in major need of a vacation right now?
Noel, you're a mind reader. I am, and aren't we all?
We are. While cruising remains popular, there's something big happening in the industry, and that is, my friend, smaller ships.
True story. The intimate ships of Avalon Waterways can go where the big ships can only dream, through winding passageways of rolling vineyards and castled hills into the heart of timeless cities and storybook villages.
That sounds like a delight. See how Avalon's smaller ships promise greater discoveries, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.